Good morning, once again. The story is probably pretty well known to most of us. Mary, Martha, Jesus, and a tattletale. And what we need to know leading up to this is that there's been a pivotal moment that's happened in the story as Luke is narrating his contribution to the life of Jesus. And in the previous chapter, Jesus is said to have set his face towards Jerusalem. And Luke will say that a couple of times at sort of important pivotal moments. And so the only reason why I bring that up is that we have to have in our mind that these are getting close to the final days of Jesus' life. And he knows this. And so there's a little bit more weight or heft to his actions and words. It's kind of like, you know, God forbid, if you know you've got a limited time left, the things that you do are probably going to be a little bit more intentional, a little more focused. And so when Jesus makes his way to Martha and Mary's house, we have a little bit more urgency, I think. Or at least we should read it with a little bit more urgency. Now, that's kind of exhausting because this whole section takes up like the inner third of the book of Luke. But nevertheless, Jesus is finishing up what he started in his career because he knows Jerusalem is coming. So if we could have the text back up. So they went on their way. This is all, it's called the travel discourse or the travel narrative. Jesus enters a village. Now, we know where that village is, and it creates not necessarily a problem, but something we have to be aware of. Mary and Martha have a really famous brother. His name is Lazarus, and they live in a town called Bethany. Lazarus, if you may know, in the book of John, is the friend of Jesus who dies, whom Jesus then raises or resuscitates or whatever you want to say. It's not really a resurrection because resurrection is permanent, if that makes sense, at least in the New Testament. So notice also that there's no mention of that, any of that whatsoever. I think it's pretty likely that Luke knew, but he doesn't include those details because for him, that's not the story he's telling. Every storyteller, every historian ever in all of the human history has had to pick and choose which details they want to focus on. That's part of being a storyteller. And you can see this coming out, like if you have a kid, you know, like 9 years old or something like that, and have them tell a story, you're going to get a lot more details than you need. The laughing tells me you know what I mean. Luke is kind of the opposite of that. Now, Mark and Matthew will tend to just throw in some extra details. Luke, not so much. The other kind of issue that we have here is that this is in Bethany, and Bethany is not very far from Jerusalem. So whether that means that Luke intentionally moves this story more to the beginning of Jesus' travels, or Jesus kind of bounced back and forth as he's kind of intentionally heading towards Jerusalem, I don't know. Take your pick. I only bring that up because we've got some pretty close readers of the Bible here, and so at some point somebody is going to make that connection going, wait, but he, and then he, I don't know. This is Luke's storytelling, not mine. But anyway, he encounters them. She welcomes him into her house. It's interesting that she's the one welcoming. And I only say that that's interesting because this is an ancient traditional culture. It should be a man. I don't shoot the messenger. So where is he? Where's Lazarus? Because it potentially could be him. No idea. And this is kind of characteristic of Luke. Luke has a tendency to focus on women. But nevertheless, she welcomes him in. She has a sister named Mary. And you might say, there's a lot of women named Mary. And yeah, that's the most popular name at that time. So she sits at the Lord's feet, as Luke says, and listens to his teaching. So this would, there would be much more than just the two of them there. Jesus' disciples, his entourage, plus that would include many other people other than the 12 that we know of. But this would also be kind of a village event. So you would expect popular teacher, he's come in, they're going to, like, the whole place is going to be surrounded, and it's the special guests and people who live there that are going to be kind of crowding in. Now, interestingly enough, there's a couple of other weird things happening in this moment. And Luke doesn't mention them, I think because he feels like he doesn't need to. Sometimes when you leave things out, or if there isn't, if an author is silent about something, we want to make more of it than it is. Like if I were to say, the United States is building a nuclear arsenal on the moon, you would say, do you have proof? And I'd say, well, they haven't said that they aren't. You would go, It's called an argument from silence. But I think there's some silence here that's actually pretty deafening. And that is, culturally, Mary shouldn't be here. It's very likely that the houses at this point were divided. There's like the male side and the female side. And Martha would probably be coming in and out to bring them food and that sort of thing. But Mary shouldn't be sitting with the men. And yet Jesus doesn't care about that. So he's kind of making some cultural statements here that would have been pretty loud in that moment. But then also there's that phrase that she sits at the Lord's feet. And that's a very descriptive, almost technical phrase. If you sit at the feet of somebody, it means you are studying under them as a disciple learns from his or her, in this case, teacher. For example, we know that Paul the Apostle identifies a very famous rabbi named Gamaliel, about whom we know quite a bit, as one of his teachers, and he explains this by saying, I sat at the feet of Gamaliel. Well, Mary could just as easily say, I sat at the feet of Jesus. In other words, Jesus is treating her like any other disciple. And we're probably not used to thinking about Jesus having disciples who are women. But Luke couldn't really be more obvious once you kind of see it. So I just bring that up because Jesus is cutting through certain cultural norms. He abides by others. And so we find ourselves asking, like, what's the point? But the focus here is clearly on Mary. So, Martha was distracted with much serving. Now, she is living up to her expected role. You invite people in as, I guess, the head woman of the house. It is her role to make sure everybody is fed. And again, this is just cultural explanation. I'm not saying this is how it should be. So she's going to be like bouncing back and forth, probably like grinding up hummus or something like that and making bread and so on and so forth. And there's at least 12 hungry men plus whomever else plus Jesus. So that's a lot. That's a lot of work. I don't know if you've ever thrown a dinner party, but once you get past like 10, you're going to be pretty tired. Now, she eventually gets tired of this, and she says to Jesus, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? That's a really loaded way of saying that. In fact, it's kind of insulting. You could, if Jesus were the really defensive type, he could have his feelings hurt. That would be like if you go to my office, you will see that my office in many ways reflects my mind. It's a mess. It's frankly a disaster, and I'm working on it, kind of. It would be like seeing my office just a cluttered mess and then going to Jerry, our congregational president, and saying,
do you not care that pastor's office is a mess? Now, that's an insult on Jerry. The implication is like, oh, you must not care. Like, how dare you not care? You're the one that should do, you should put pressure on him to do this. And please don't. right? No, I'm not cleaning it. unless necessary. It's like saying, I don't know, I'll just use the example of dishes, because dishes are a constant presence in everybody's life. Like, don't you know that there are dirty dishes? It's insulting. It's aggressive, and it kind of hurts. So Martha is at least at her wit's end, and you can kind of hear through this, she's pretty upset at her sister, and she's being really aggressive with Jesus as well. This is the image, and it's amazing what you can kind of pull out of a very small bit of dialogue, but you can tell, like, she is frantic and not responding well. So Jesus answered her, Martha, Martha. That double name means business. That's like if your mom uses your middle name when she's yelling at you. Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. So Jesus honors Mary. But he also seems to try to meet Martha where she's at. Because she's clearly freaking out. And so the question I have for us today is, what would happen if Martha started doing what Mary did? Well, there's kind of an honor shame sort of thing going on. You have to show hospitality to those who enter your house, culturally speaking. You have to. Would it be the end of the world if she didn't? Probably not. Jesus strikes me as a forgiving kind of guy. And yet, a bunch of people would be pretty hungry. And so the longer you sit on this very brief interaction, you can see that there are a lot of things swirling around here, because Martha's task is important. And what Mary is doing is absolutely vital. And I think this story sometimes gets misused to sort of push away or to downplay the importance of people who serve. Because I could say, if I were that kind of person, the only thing you need is Jesus, nothing else matters, and then at some point you would find yourself going, yeah, but if nobody did their jobs, this would be a mess. So there are two things I think that we can pull from this for us today, and one of them is intensely practical, and the other is very much focused on Jesus. The first is Martha's action, her language. Like, she doesn't say much. Luke doesn't fill in a lot of details, but you can kind of see her body language, can't you? And you're probably going to imagine her body language in the same way as somebody who is kind of similar to this. And by the way, everyone is similar to this in some way. She's very focused on what Mary should be doing. Have you ever been focused on something that somebody should be doing? And did you have the right to decide what they should be doing? Unless that person is like a child in your care, probably not. Things kind of go out the window when in certain kinds of relationships where there's a lot of authority. Otherwise, probably not. It's easy to like read the news or turn on the TV or, who am I kidding? Most of us get our news from our phones anyway. Look at your phone and hear about things happening somewhere else, or things happening at a federal or state level or in this city or that city, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter the context. And you could say, those people should be whatever. To which this story might remind us a little bit of the fact that this may surprise us, but we're not in charge. I can't control what you guys do. You can't control what I do. Jerry can't tell me to clean my office. He could. I'd probably ignore it, but he might. And what this speaks to in terms of Martha's attitude towards Mary is one that is so obsessed with what people should be doing that she's not stopping to take a step back and think, why am I trying to control what she's doing? Because if we use the word should, what we're really vying for is a little bit more control. And when we vie for control, what we're ultimately doing is we are saying, I'm not going to be okay unless I can control the actions and outcome of the things around me. Like if I can impose a certain order and people can do what they should, I think they should be doing around me, then I will be okay. I will not be anxious. I will be at peace. And that's so common. I feel comfortable in saying that absolutely everybody in this room is like this, especially myself. And yet, to borrow it, I apologize ahead of time, to borrow the phrase of Dr. Phil at TV Personality, and I'm not a fan of his at all, but how's that working for you? Because you can try to control the actions of the people around you, and you can sit in that space of those people should, but you're either going to burn yourself out or you're going to burn bridges and relationships that probably mean a lot to you. So on the one hand, we have this intense desire to control kind of a chaotic situation. And yet at the same time, Martha has a point. The expectation would be that Mary helps her out. And so now we have to see things from a different vantage point. Jesus knows that his time is somewhat limited. And depending chronologically where this moment happens, and frankly, it doesn't matter that much, with limited time, Jesus intends to pour as much as he could into everybody that he can find. And as strange, or maybe as obvious even, as this may sound, feeding a bunch of people is not nearly as important as sitting at the feet of the Son of God. Service is a really good idea. And Christians throughout our entire history are we're known for a lot of things. Some of them not great. But one of the great things that we are known for is serving. Serving and caring for others. Like if you could imagine all the churches and faith-based organizations and communities in the United States vanishing suddenly, society would collapse. Think of all the hungry mouths, the people who need clothing, who need services, and the church has been there for them. Suddenly, when that's gone, we're going to have a problem. And these are all good things. Martha is not necessarily sinning because she's trying to serve, but she's missing the one single most important thing. Because who Jesus is ultimately reflects who she is. I'll say that again, because this is going to be kind of weird. Who Jesus is ultimately works its way back to say something about who she is. Because especially in the book of Luke, as Jesus goes and teaches, And especially during this time when he is making his way towards Jerusalem, he is constantly reminding the people he encounters that they are part of the kingdom of God. That their identity is wrapped up in what Jesus is accomplishing right now, and ultimately who he is. And in so many ways, what he is ultimately saying is, whatever you do, whoever you are, ideally, will flow from what Jesus has done for you. The problem with Martha isn't so much that she's serving and getting frustrated with her sister. That happens. The problem for Martha is that she's going in the wrong direction. But as Jesus is making his way towards Jerusalem, he is going to remind his followers multiple times and in many ways, and basically none of them are going to get it until it actually happens, that he is taking on this identity, this vocation of ancient Israel, of God's people. And he's going to take it and go to the most logical conclusion of that story, which means it's going to end in his death. And then his resurrection. And it's not a coincidence that the first witnesses of Jesus' resurrection are the women. And they're the ones that take this crazy news to the disciples. And of course, the disciples don't believe them. That's a conversation for a different time. But nonetheless, what Jesus is slowly doing as he is making his way toward Jerusalem is he is redefining what it means to be human. And in this little narrative, this little interaction, it only has a couple of lines between two sisters, one of whom seems to be really type A. Maybe she's German. I don't know. And getting frustrated with her sister who should be doing something else. And what this moment highlights for us is that the beginning of who we are and everything we do is in Jesus. Jesus is the one who defines our self-worth. Jesus is the one who defines a sense of peace. Like I was saying as we were going through the, we were in the election season, which feels like 6 years ago, I guess, that it truly doesn't matter who is elected because Jesus is still king. And if who I am is defined by the fact that Jesus sits on his throne, the one who gave himself for me, who defeated death itself, which means that when I die someday in the future, hopefully many years from now, that death doesn't have the final word. And ultimately, that is who I am. Then maybe the little things that happen that sort of bug me, or the way that people act and behave and construct reality around me, maybe that doesn't have to get under my skin quite as much. Maybe, like Martha, if we see people who are not doing what they, quote, should be doing, maybe that doesn't have to be quite as scary. Because, as Jesus will say, there's only one thing that is necessary, and it's sitting at his feet. And to sit at the feet of Jesus is to receive the grace, the forgiveness, and new life that he won for us. Suddenly, a chaotic, out-of-control world is not quite as scary as it used to be. Amen.